The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power, home of the GA Hour Hurling ACCA.
Well, when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I should go, and so it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
So I have to start off, Brian, by congratulating you as an Offaly man on Shane Lowry's brilliant achievement. And, like, I mean, I presume you have a sore head today. You were in Clara last night singing.
I wish I was in Clara last night singing with Mundy. No, Championship Saturday, so on the straight and narrow this week. But, I know, look, everyone in Offaly, absolutely delighted. The whole place went wrong in Clara for the last couple of nights. I've gotten a load of Snapchats and Twitter feeds hopping. So, no, look, in fairness to Shane, he's a good guy. I think that's well documented. You see the way that everyone in Ireland has got behind him. But, you know, he gave us a talk with Offaly years ago in the hurling, and just very humble and very honest. But he comes from that type of background. He's not your typical golfer, I suppose. He just comes from a normal background, played GA himself growing up along, and just happened to be very good at golf, and just eventually made it to the top. So, look, fair play to him. But, geez, I'd love to be in Clara last night. Looked like some crack.
Yeah, it looked like some crack. And I started panicking. I saw Connor Sketches doing a video. I said, there is no way that little so-and-so is in Clara again. I was thinking Connor Sketches had won the Open himself. This lad's gone absolutely...
He's been with him every day.
He's gone haywire. And he's meant to be doing me a video for the show tomorrow night in Wexford. No, he's up. A true pro. He's up and he's doing it here at the moment. He's getting his Gerlach Nan and Davy Fitz out for tomorrow night.
So he pulled him out a couple of times yesterday as well.
I did. I saw him in the Boar's Head there. He was doing Loch Nan as well. So, like, I mean, listen, fantastic stuff, yeah. And I wish Shane congratulations on the football show. So we should do it on the hurling show definitely as well. He's one of our own. That's what we were saying. Like, I mean, whatever you say about McIlroy or Harrington, yeah. I don't know, GA people just love Lowry because, you know, the father's connection, and he's a GA man. Yeah. And I don't know, is there an insecurity about us that we just love kind of having someone doing something good that is a GAA person?
Oh, he's so likable, Wooly. Even the clip for his granny, you know,
that was great.
It's brilliant. Like, you know, it's just everything about him. He seems so down to earth and delighted for him. It's great for Ireland. It's a great lift, you know, especially for Offaly.
Yeah, Offaly hurling needed that.
I think he's taking them next year, I heard.
Chairman and everything now.
I don't think he would deal with the county board too well, would he, Brian, with the professional setup he's used to. So yeah, we mentioned the live show, Connor Sketches pulling a video together. So we're in the Crown Bar in Wexford town tomorrow night. So we've Michael Deignan, James O'Connor, and Tony Brown. They're going to talk mostly about Davy Fitz, which there's loads of talking about.
The big hitters in then for tomorrow night, is it?
We have feuds. Well, you didn't have a feud with Davy, although you kind of had a little bit of one this summer, Brian. Yeah, I didn't think of that.
Yeah, I know. That's how you make your name, you see. You go for Davy.
Then we have Larry O'Gorman, Tom Dempsey, and Cheddar. So Tom Dempsey's going to sing us a song, and we're going to have music with Mick Darcy, local musician, to see out the show. So it was actually raging. We went for a venue, the Crown Bar, which is, it's a very good venue. It's a capacity of 200. On day one, we had about 600 people looking for tickets. These Wexicans are crazy. They're lunatics.
We could have
done a bigger venue, but we didn't. But anyway, it's going to be absolutely packed out. But just on that, like, I mean, it's their Wexford's first All-Ireland semi-final in 12 years. And there's talk about a crowd of 65,000 coming on Sunday. Wexford County Board is selling 30,000 tickets. Tipperary only 15. Yeah. That's poor from Tipperary now, you'd have to say. And they're looking at the rest, another 20 with neutrals coming up to the game. But, like, I mean, 30,000 for Wexford, they are fanatical supporters, Mick, aren't they?
Oh, I love the Wexford crowd, Willie. Like, whenever you're playing them, they're so loud, colourful, and they're mad about Wexford hurling. I suppose they haven't been here in a while, and there's huge optimism for the game as well. Like, they love Davy, they love this team, and they can see themselves going past Tipperary, which you couldn't have said over the years, you know.
I think
they're in a great place, and again, with the Tip supporters, look, they're a fickle enough bunch. They want to see All-Irelands or nothing, you know. And so I say someone might be saving themselves for the trip down.
15,000 to an All-Ireland semi-final. I think that's poor. Now, Limerick and Kilkenny isn't much better, because they're expecting a crowd at that one of 50,000. Mm. So if you're going on the basis that there's maybe 20,000 neutrals, the same as the other one, then you're looking at only 15,000 from both those counties, and they're much bigger counties as well, Brian. So that, I don't know. Like, I mean, for Limerick and Kilkenny, you'd imagine they should be selling out Croke Park for an All-Ireland semi-final.
Well, we've never seen that, let's be honest, because it's not that long ago. I suppose it's definitely when I was growing up, there was double headers for All-Ireland semi-finals. So,
right.
I'm not too worried about that numbers. I still think they're decent numbers, being honest. Once you're hitting around the 50,000 mark, I think you're doing okay. So I wouldn't be overly concerned about filling out 80,000. I think obviously the All-Ireland brings a huge amount of neutrals and your Sunshine supporters then as well. But Wexford crowd, just to go on them, they're unbelievable. Like, I remember we played them in the national final all the way back in 2004, and there was about 45,000, and I'd say there was about 40,000 Wexford. Like, it was just amazing. You know, they're just the noise of them, the sheer crescendo of noise. You know, they're unbelievable. The Wexicans, as they say. But you know, Tipperary, fickle. That's a massive problem. Look, they thought they were blowing through Munster. They were getting great crowds at all the games, and it's amazing how quickly they can turn on their own. So they'll be expecting to get through this. Like, you know, there'll be a little bit of arrogance there as well, but. You know, look, we can analyse that later on, maybe. But
yeah,
they might get their comeuppance too.
Maybe they're believing Liam Sheedy that Wexford are raging hot favourites and there's no point in going up there.
I know.
Well, that fickle now.
So I seen Michael Ryan saying during the week that he if Davey tried to play the game plan he plays for Wexford in Tip, the crowd would turn them so quickly, you know, even if he was getting the results, because they just want to see that flamboyant hurling. And
yeah,
it's just the Tip crowd, you know.
Yeah, there's an element of truth to that, I suppose. Absolutely. There's an element of truth to that. That kind of works with counties trying to make the breakthrough rather than the big traditional ones. Jake Morris, lads, I don't know, were you watching this one last night?
Yeah.
It was a goal to win it. I didn't see it last night. To be honest, it completely slipped my mind that it was even on, so I was a little bit annoyed. So it was an injury time goal.
A smashing goal, Willie.
Was it?
My club manager, Joey Morris, played for Dublin for years, great hurler himself. He's been right. This is his nephew, you know, and every time I've been training, he's like, my nephew, he's a smashing hurler. You'll see him for Tip in a few years, and geez, he's hit the same. Like, even when he came on for Tip for the last years, he's always made an impact. Love watching him play because he has that unpredictable ability about him where he'd fling a ball over his shoulder and stitch it when he shouldn't be shooting, and
right.
His hands and his wrists are brilliant. But he had a lot of work to do when he came onto that ball last night. Like, last few seconds, his touch is exceptional, Willie, and he got that ball up and he still had, like, at an awkward angle, but the shot he took was dead. He, like, low and hard. You always tell forwards low and hard. It's always the percentage shot, you know, and it was a fantastic goal. But
and
it
was it blown up from the puck out from that?
No, it was a few seconds played after,
right.
But it was like, it was 4 minutes extra at the time, and that was, so there was like 30 seconds left after.
Jesus.
And that was sick for Cork.
It's hard to know.
Cork were very good. They were very good.
And the Cork lost the All-Ireland final. They were raging hot favourites, I know, for the All-Ireland final last year after hammering Tip in the Munster. Were the favourites last night, Brian? Or slight favourites, I think, reading about it?
Slight, I think, yeah. But it was. I actually watched it from start to finish as well, and so it was seesaw. Cork looked like to want to blow Tip away early on. You know, they went 5-6 points up, and then somehow by half time, Tip got a, you know, fortuitous enough goal. Well, it was great work by the guy that came on, and he went around two or three players and flicked into the net, but kind of changed the dynamic of the game. And after that, then it was just, you know, to-ing and fro-ing. But look, a point on Jake Morris, I think it opens up a much wider debate, which I think is the great thing about, like, Jake barely got a puck at for 60-odd minutes. Like, Jerm Elric did a massive man-marking job on him. No matter where Jake went, Jerm Elric went to win him. Noticeably, he was also a left-handed hurler, because usually, obviously, lefties, we've talked about this a few times, they can be very dominant in the air, very tricky for a traditional, you know, right-handed hurler, where Cork put another left-handed hurler. So Jake wasn't able to win that high ball, was really struggling. Jerm Elric seemed to have the pace on him as well. But Liam Cahill, as manager, to his testament, and this is the point I'm trying to make, he stuck with him. He, you know, Jake didn't seem to be looking over to the sideline to see was he going to be whipped. Just stayed at it, lefty's best player on the field. And eventually, with that confidence in the young fella himself, the confidence he was getting from his manager, you know, the right ball fell to the right man at the right time. So it just shows up and down the country, we've seen this time and time again. You know, there's many a times we've seen lads getting roasted and might pop up to win score. I remember John Milan doing it actually against Galway in Championship. Looked like Galway were going to pick Waterford apart, and Milan just got first poke of the ball nearly in the 62nd minute, popped it over the bar, and Turles as well actually. So it's very important. Whereas on the other side of it, Cork actually whipped Robert Downey, their main senior hurler as well. Downey started wing back, ended up going to wing forward, went into full forward, got whipped. I know he wasn't playing well, don't get me wrong, but yeah, maybe if they had stuck him a little bit more around the half back line or even midfield, you know, where he's been used to hurling all year. I know he played underage, he played full forward because he's massive. He's about 6'6" or 6'7", the guy. But if they had showed a little bit more kind of, you know, confidence in him and in the positions he was playing, he could have been the difference in the end for Cork.
Brian's fighting the good fight for the corner forwards. Will he be with that again? Well,
no, but I do take his point. Like, I've often been playing for Portlaoise and knowing I'm not playing well, but also knowing I'm not getting taken off here, and I can, I'm not under that pressure that if that this was a Laois game, I'd be gone off the field.
Absolutely.
And it was actually very funny just on that point. The last Masters or two Masters games ago, we're playing Mayo. And again, I wasn't in the game a huge amount, and you know, there was about 10 minutes to go and I was getting taken off. Now you can rotate subs there, but it was 10 minutes to go, I wasn't being rotated, I was getting I was getting brought off. And as I was running off, Greg Ramsbottom said to me, he says, here, my hammer's tightening up here, I'll go off. And I went, okay, grand. I went back in, moved myself into full forward and scored 2 points to win it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, it's a weird one. It's definitely a weird one.
And the ref last night, will you just to say, he was brilliant. Brian probably agreed with me. Like, there was little niggles, and he just let play go for both sides, and it was a real free flowing game. And we wouldn't see that in senior in the county championship because he'd blow every single free, you know. And it was great to see because just like as a supporter watching it, the game flowed so well. Like, it was a really great game of hurling, and he could have pulled up a lot of little things, and he didn't. So I think he deserves a lot of credit for such a good game last night.
Yeah, on that, Derek Connery, he was playing midfield, number 12, and he's back last night for Cork. He buried himself and Jake Morris came together. One stage, and he gave Jake a little dunt into the stomach, and Jake went down actually because it was right for the referee. He did get a nice little bit of a clip. Referee just went over him, get up. You know, like the physio would come in, and all the physio just went over and look at Jake, and Jake was like, okay, I kind of actually have to get up here and get on with it. So look, that's what we've been calling for you know, I've been definitely calling for it on this show for a long time, you know, little taps like that. You're not breaking a hurl off a lad, so get on with it, really.
Cop on, in fairness. And like, it's a weird one. Cork probably needed that win last night more than Tipperary probably did, like after them winning the whole thing out last year. I was reading a quote from Jake Morris during the week, and he was talking about balancing the under-20s with the seniors. And he says, we're not overtrained, we're kept fresh. It's down to management, really. This year, with strength and conditioning and the training we're doing, I suppose you'd be more ready for it. Last year it was all fresh to me. I enjoyed it, and I'm enjoying this year even more. Just thought that was an interesting one. This year, with strength and conditioning and the training we're doing, I suppose you'd be more ready for it. And that wouldn't be an issue in Dublin, because I presume Brian Cullen oversees strength and conditioning right down through the ranks. So the under-21s wouldn't be coming into the seniors going, oh, well, here's a bench press or here's a... Yeah. So I was interested in with a progressive, strong county like Tipperary, that they wouldn't have that strength and conditioning centralised. I'm just taking it from that they don't, Michael.
No, it sounds like that, Willie. Like, and I don't know. Like, from my setups over the last few years, the senior manager has a huge say on what goes on at minor and 21 or under-20s now. And it has to be like that, Willie, because there has to be that continuity between all... You can't have minors doing one thing and pulling against what the senior level lads are going at, because it doesn't work that way. And I think like the likes of Brian Cullen running the whole thing in Dublin, it works so well because everyone knows where you're at and what you should be doing. And I'm surprised to hear such a big county like Tip weren't doing that over the years. But
That's the thing.
Like, especially with Jake and the young talent, like at least it gets you ready for what's going on in senior hurling. And if you're doing the same thing, then that's one aspect you don't have to worry about in a few years' time.
But that's the thing, and like, we're not saying that even every county can't afford a Brian Cullen for starters.
Absolutely.
Now some can, most can't, but like, I mean, minors doing strength and conditioning, Brian, and they're doing muscle building, while the senior strength and conditioning coach likes power training, for example, and doesn't like muscle training. And it moved on. Strength and conditioning, from my limited knowledge now, has moved on from when I started doing it in 07, from trying to get big arms and big legs. It's not that anymore. It's all power based. So like, I mean, doesn't it make so much sense to have the one fella doing all teams?
Yeah, no, it certainly does, and there needs to be a coherent program there, and it needs to be built up from quite a young age, and that those figures are there as the player progresses. I think that the minute you hit the development squads, those numbers need to be there. I think the same for any sorts of hurling tests as well, so that they're able to monitor their players. So the transition from every age group, be it from 14s to 16s or minor or whatever, that it's all coherent and that the manager's not just taking the first couple of months to figure out what type of player he has in front of him. I think some of the wider point in that is maybe he is adapting to the fact that he's juggling so many things as a young man, because obviously he would have started college last year, he would have had his colleges hurling, he would have had playing under-20s, well, under-21 for Tip last year, playing senior on the senior panel, obviously playing club and all that. So I was trying to manage that maybe as much as anything. I know personally, I hated, and I know this is wrong, but I'm being very honest here, I hated playing under-21. It was just a killer. Like, you'd be training, what, 4 nights a week with Offaly, trying to get in a night or two of weights and on top of that, and then throwing in, along with that, would have been the odd night, an under-21 training, an under-21 practice match. Some of the under-21 managers, I don't think they ever spoke to the senior manager. There seemed to be complete disharmony there. I know it's a different time. It's 15 years ago, but it just seemed to be, it was a horrible time. And, I think that's what he's talking about, that there seems to be much more coherent program for him as a player, so that he actually enjoys it. And as he said, listen to the words he said that he was fresh, because that's a big thing. I always found that it was just a huge drain, having to go on what should be your night off, having to go to another training session. I don't care what age you are, it's tough.
It's a weird one in Leitch, because we had been coming up through the underage ranks and we were really good. Our focus was under 21, so the senior manager didn't get us. It was the other way around. The senior manager got us when the odd time. So I remember when I got picked for my first ever start with Leash Seniors, I was really worried would I get on the team because I hadn't given him any commitment. Okay. Do you know what I mean? I've been with you.
Yeah, for sure. So the focus I was in sixth year, Woolly, when I joined the Dublin Senior Hurlers. So I had a lot going on. I was 21 senior and six. I was in 6 year doing my leaving cert. But I remember I'd never been to a gym in my life. I loved hurling. That was it. And we rocked up to my first gym session with Dublin and onto the bench, and I was there, grand, this is going to be grand. Lived at the bench, of course, down, I had no clips on either side, the weights fell off one side, then they fell off the other, I'm left with the bar like a flonker. I was just there going, oh, the ground swallowed me up, but there was no such thing as, it was just going there, bench press and bench, there was no strength conditioning as such then, so it's come on so much over the past 15 years.
I know, it definitely has. I went down in Tralee with Jim McGuinness doing weights, I'd never done them before, this was in 98, he was doing them, he was into them, and I remember doing so many bicep curls. I swear, the next day my arms were bent, I couldn't push. When I push my arms down straight, they bounce back
yeah,
up.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, when's this going to stop or what? Anyways, you're so pure naive back in those days. Let's stick to the hurling here, quickly. Sorry. We get back into it. I want to talk about this. Now, we talk about this every year, and I don't want to spend too much time on it. And this is the Munster champions record when they win Munster in the Ireland semi-final. So of the 14 occasions since 2002, where the Munster champions have advanced directly into an Ireland semi-final, there used to be quarterfinals for a few years, they have won just 4 times. 4 out of 14, right? So there used to be a 5-week layoff. Now there's a 4. Jimmy Barry Murphy said, he said, this was after 14. He says, if we're ever in that position again, I would use the time far differently. We had too much time together. We were doing the same thing over and over again. The players would have been far better off going back to their clubs for 2 weeks. And you look at the Kilkenny's record of the 15 Ireland semi-finals, Kilkenny won. In the first 18 seasons under Brian Cody, 11 were secured after at least a 4 or 5 week layoff. Number one, Brian Cody let them back to the clubs. Yeah. Number two, I suppose it's important to point out that Kilkenny won it every year, so they could get their kind of schedule right, where Munster was shared around a bit more, so it's new to them nearly all the time, Michael.
And plus, Woody, that's probably the greatest hurling team that's ever played. You have to take that into account as well with Kilkenny. So, I don't know. I wouldn't look too deeply into it. As you say, it's very hard when you get that 5 week break. We struggled with Dublin waiting for the All Ireland semi final that time. Just managing your time properly. If you haven't been there before, it's a difficult thing to do. And as you say, Ryan Cody is a huge advocate of sending players back to clubs, and they're used to it. Kilkenny, they know how to spend that time. And again, I wouldn't look too deeply into it, because that's such a good Kilkenny team. It doesn't really matter what you did over the 5 weeks. They were going to beat.
It's a bit of an outlier.
Going to beat most teams anyway, but. It's interesting to hear Jim Barry Murphy say that, and how to manage it, and teams might learn from it, but again, unless you're there all the time, it's very, very difficult time to think to manage.
Yeah, you know, it definitely is. And it's 4 weeks now. The last time Limerick won Munster was in 2013 and they were hammered by Clare in the semi-final. I don't know. This is completely different, Brian. I don't think Limerick will be unduly worried about that layoff.
Don't think so. And I look back then, we had totally different Limerick, you know, in terms of mentality and their approach to the game. So John Kiley's very astute, obviously. He'll manage that really well. And it does, look, there's a bit of an excuse there as well being thrown out there sometimes by the Munster Brigade about, you know, how hard Munster has been and, you know, it was difficult then with the layoff. I accept Michael's point that this Kilkenny team were the greatest of all time, but what Brian Cody did was very, very simple. He let them back to the clubs. He relinquished some control, which is sometimes the greatest sign of a manager. You know, it's one of his greatest strengths that he doesn't want complete control of his players, and trust that when they get in there, then, you know, whatever their two or three week window of actually approaching the All-Ireland semi-final, that, you know, it's helter skelter then from there on in.
Yeah.
So, like other teams, why couldn't they learn from what Cody was doing? It's not like, you know, the hurling world is a very small area. It's very easy to see what Kilkenny were at. You know, even from the outside, without even making any inquiries, like a phone call or two, and you'll definitely know exactly what they were at. Because in fairness, Kilkenny did an open door policy at the time as well. So it wasn't or isn't rocket science. I think Kiley will have managed that really well. And as well, you have to listen to the message that comes from the top as well. I think that's really important. I think that sometimes can not get enough credit. The manager dictates this. You know, the message, key message he's getting out to his players can really affect, both in a positive and negative way, how they deal with that 4 to 5 weeks. So, look, I don't think it'll affect Limerick one bit. I think if they're beaten on Sunday, which will be a tall ask by Kilkenny, it certainly won't be anything else to do with the 4 weeks. And they, of all people, won't blame the 4 weeks.
It's trust, Brian, you're right. Because most managers don't trust their players to go back and train at an intensity of the same intensity with inter-county as their clubs. And then it depends on how many club players are playing at senior level. Some are intermediate, some are junior. They mightn't train too often at all. And
yeah,
it's a huge thing. But I think if you go back to your club, you get that release. Like it's not as tough, both mentally and physically. And you come back to the senior scene fresher. Will you? I think it's a win-win for the majority of teams.
I think for,
you know,
4 weeks, yeah, mentally 1 week and have a 3 week build-up. Because A versus
absolutely.
B's, 4 weeks of that is a long time, isn't it? And then
yeah,
keeping training fresh.
I'm trying to keep that fresh as well.
All that kind of stuff. And then, like, I mean, with the Limerick intensity of the A versus B's, you've one bad game and you could be worried about your position. And there's a huge, I'm sure that 4 weeks mentally is difficult for them, Brian.
Yeah, no, definitely. And look, again, look, go back to this trust issue and how a manager actually approaches it. And I'll use a different example here. Ballyhale with Henry Shefflin last year, and shows what Henry obviously learnt off Cody. So Ballyhale won the county final in Kilkenny. They were playing Navena and Wexford, but in between was that Wild Geese tournament down in Australia, and obviously Kilkenny were invited down to it. It was three or four of the Kilkenny hurlers supposed to go to it. Like, most managers in the country would have freaked in that situation. They would have said, no way you are going to Australia, yeah, leading up to a Leinster semi-final. Shefflin, because I spoke to some of the Ballyhale players, Shefflin told them, go away, lads, take your rest, enjoy it, you're going to come back. Like, the message he was sending, you'll come back fresh as a daisy. Now, the boys didn't even hurl down there. They didn't even tug out down in Australia. They went, they more or less had a bit of a holiday, obviously had a few beers at the appropriate time, you know, relaxed, turn around, and then murder Navena in the semi-final. Colin Fennelly goes to town. You know, he scores three or four goals in that Leinster semi-final. And they kick their season on from there.
Yeah.
Because they stuttered through Kilkenny almost at times. So it's amazing, too, that element of trust from your manager. And as I said, Shefflin didn't lick that off the ground in terms of he's you know, been open to Cody for so long.
Yeah, very good point. Very good point. Colin Bonner has been quoted this week, lads, and he's talking about Tipperary Wexford, and he says it's a huge challenge for the Tipperary players to close down the runners and bring it into a real battle. That's what Wexford had to learn to do, because Kilkenny are the masters at it. Tip know how hard Kilkenny can play it and the intensity levels they bring, and Wexford had to learn to do that too. To survive in Leinster, that is what you have to learn to do. I think that's the big difference between Munster hurling and Leinster hurling. Sometimes what lets down Munster hurling is the lack of a manic intensity. Now, Colin Bonner is a Tipperary man, yeah. So he's no bias, and we have a huge Leinster bias on this show, which we need to be pulled up on. But I have to disagree with Colin Bonner there, yeah. And say, Jesus, some of those Munster games, like, smashing, I mean, yeah. Maybe 10 years ago that was the case, Michael, but it's definitely not now.
No, I nearly think he's speaking more of Tip than Munster in general there, because right. It's been like, if you look at Tip, their backline is always questioned. And I think he's speaking more about that because there's been some massive, massive physicality games in Munster, yeah. Over the years. So I don't think you can look at that too carefully. Like Michael Ryan, again, go back to you. I did an interview this week and I read it. It was really interesting. He spoke about the biggest myth in hurling is the lack of speed in the Tip backline. So from managing them and being involved in them for so long, he says it is the biggest myth. He said the two things he thinks is to blame for it. They're such an attacking team that when they push forward, they forget sometimes. They leave such a gap and leave that full back line really vulnerable, which is understandable. Like Tip like to play that attacking game.
Yeah.
But the second one was interesting to me. He said, when we're focused in the back line and our work rate and our tenacity is up, no forward lines get the better of us. So that's questioning their work rate in the games over the last 2 years. And I'm surprised because like they're such a good back line and there's leaders in that in that back line, like the likes of Demers and Brendan Maher. I'm surprised that would allow be happen, you know. So I can't see Liam Sheedy allowing that happen because he's that motivator and that motivational type. But like, it was interesting to hear that it's not lack of pace. He said during training they could catch anybody, no matter how fast the forwards were, and there is some really fast forwards in the Tip line. So I found that really interesting, just that he's putting it down to focus and work rate,
yeah.
Rather than there is a lack of pace. Because everyone always speaks of a lack of pace in that Tip back line.
They do.
And he said it's not a problem, so...
Yeah, I think the two Mares aren't blessed with huge pace. No. Maybe that's it. And plus, like, I do accept your point. Like, I mean, Barcelona you're told they're terrible defenders, but like, I mean, they're just left so exposed that, yeah. They look terrible.
So
that's the philosophy. Tip focus more on probably forward play, I would imagine.
Yeah, when you listen to Bonner's comments, I think that's he's speaking more of a Tip thing than the Munster thing, because there's been some ding dong battles in Munster.
Yeah, no, that's true. Brian, would you agree with that? I know you like to blow the Leinster trumpet, but surely we're not claiming intensity over Munster as well.
No, I know he's a Tipperary man, and obviously he's seen it firsthand. I suppose what the point probably he's making is a much broader thing. I think the game has probably changed a bit. Like, Tipperary are very flamboyant, as we said, or very much forward-based. Cork, obviously, the exact same thing. The one thing you always say about when you play Cork is they'll let you hurl. Even though they hammered Westmead a couple of weeks ago, they still let Westmead do a lot of hurling and still put up 20 points against them. You know, Clare, something similar to where their forward line is at the moment. You know, they can be very nice hurlers. Waterford obviously going. So I kind of get what he's saying, but I don't think that's an overall reflection. I don't think he's completely on the money there either. I think, in fairness, I think every team is looking for massive intensity.
Yeah.
I think the masters of it down through the years obviously were Kilkenny. Mm-hmm. They just brought it day in, day out, no matter who they played against. And that's what Cody even said. They stayed competitive for the last couple of years, even when they didn't have their best team out there, because they had that massive, massive work rate and intensity. And Wexford have obviously brought it up a level at the moment. They're actually arguably outworking anyone at the moment.
Yeah, no, definitely. You mentioned, just to finish up, lads, you mentioned Westmead. The news breaking this morning is Joe Quaid has been sacked as Westmead manager, which I find absolutely incredible. The Independent are breaking this, yeah. So he hasn't walked away. I got that. That's definitely confirmed that he hasn't stepped down. So he's losing his job because he's been axed. So he played in 3 competitions this year. He won 2 and got to the final of a third and lost to a good Leash team.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, the Independent saying Westmead GA will tonight confirm the departure of Joe Quaid after just 1 year in charge. So they lost to Leash. Oh yeah, Westmead GA officials are due to meet tonight to confirm the departure of Limerick's 94-96 goalkeeper. It's not yet clear what level of support the executive's decision has among players, but it is understood that they were fully aware it was happening, which I find is a funny line. So I was talking to someone involved with Westmead who had talked to some players and they didn't know it was happening. So okay. I don't know, did all the players know it was happening or what's going on? Look, lads, we don't know what's going on, but looking from the outside, you'd say Joe Quaid's doing fine there. And he's won 2 and lost to a good Leash team. I would completely discount the Cork game. That's very unfair what they were asked to do. And it's just, it looks like a very strange decision.
It's a joke, Willie. As I said, we don't know the goings on of... the dressing room where they're troubled there and they're keeping quiet about it. But like, if the players weren't aware of it, I think it's a joke of a decision, because he's done really, really well. And you see how good Leash went on to beat Dublin. They're a really good side, so like, it's understandable they lost that final, you know. And I think it's a joke of a decision. If there's no trouble in the camp, it's definitely a joke of a decision, because what did they expect?
He's done really
well with them, and I don't know what did they expect of the next manager.
he has to win the Joe McDonagh Cup and the All Ireland.
Yeah, exactly.
Getting like Real Madrid, Brian, where you can win the Champions League and still get sacked.
Yeah, look, crazy. They lost 3 games. Okay, they hammered Offaly in their first game. Really impressive. Now, I know Offaly were terrible, but still hugely impressive. Had to still let go do it. They took their eye off the ball against Kerry in their next game, and they got beaten in that. I think that one, of all the defeats, I think that would be probably one of the sorest defeats. They then went up to Antrim, and they had a massive win up there. You know, it was on the line. It was, you know, the boat managers at the time called it, you know, it was essentially a semi-final. The winner went through, and, you know, they were so impressive. Beating Antrim up in Dunleigh, like, and beat them comprehensively as well. Like, you can't underestimate how big that win is, you know, for any hurling county, I don't care who they are, going up to Antrim and beating them up there, and especially beating them comprehensively, that's just not done. Leash obviously were the best team in the Joe McDonagh by a mile, and they showed that in the Joe McDonagh final. And then, you know, when they were playing Cork, you know, I spoke to Joe actually before the game. I know Joe reasonably well, and, you know, he said there was, you know, he obviously wanted to go with a sweeper, wanted to clog the middle third, kind of set up similar enough to the way Wexford were setting up, you know, maybe at long periods only leave one inside. He says, you know, that there seemed to be a little bit of a kickback that, you know, the players and the manager didn't really want it. And, you know, they went out in the first half to concede 24 points in the first half doing that. They actually, whatever must have happened at half time, they reverted back to your traditional 15-on-15 in the second half. And still, you know, Cork put 116 up on them. Like, I don't know what was going to happen. I don't know what expectation the players, the management, the county board had from that game. You know, Cork were always going to blow them out of the water. So, you know, I just find that really strange, really bizarre. But I suppose trying to read between the lines, there must have been more going on there. If certain players are aware of it and certain other players aren't, then that to me speaks and that there are certain players being acting or moving in the kind of behind the scenes.
Yeah, no, exactly. We'll find out more today. I think Westmeath are due to release a statement, and then I think we're going to hear something from Joe Quaid then on the back of that. So we'll hear more today, but obviously this podcast will be gone out by the time we hear that. Right, lads, we'll leave it there and we'll come back and talk about Limerick Kilkenny.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought that up now, because there's no such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do?
No, we don't.
But you didn't let Shamey talk at a hurley launch one day.
Yeah, but hold on a second now. He was at a hurley launch, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a media ban if he can't talk at that.
No, absolutely not. I think you guys need to do your job. Don't depend on us guys for quotes, you know.
Okay.
Earn your living like the rest of us.
But if he's at a media day and he says to the media that I'm not allowed to talk, then he's obviously on a ban.
Well, I think he's carrying a mixed message.
So what a difference a year makes, lads. This time last year, Limerick were kind of young guns, unproven. Kilkenny were the monkey on their back. They couldn't beat them.
Yeah.
Ended up beating them in a classic game. Won the All-Ireland, won the league, won the Munster. And now Kilkenny are going to play them where the roles are almost reversed. Like, well, Kilkenny are definitely underdogs going into it. They're 2-1 outsiders, actually, Kilkenny are, which is a very good price on Kilkenny. But, like, Limerick, how much they've come on. And I think even beating Kilkenny was a huge part of that, Michael.
Yeah, psychologically, that was huge, really, because, like, trying to get over that barrier of beating Kilkenny is such a big, big thing for teams. And when they did that, I think the belief was there in the camp and they could beat anybody and they'll have no fear coming into this weekend. Look, I suppose me and Boogs got it wrong with Cork and Kilkenny last.
Yeah, a lot of people did.
Yeah, like, Kilkenny were really impressive. They didn't show any of the indecisiveness they showed the week prior. There was no panic going into the game. And when it was really important, their big players stood up, like the likes of Richie Hogan, back to form. Like, they're only bringing on Walter. Like, Kilkenny are strong, but their back line was really impressive to me. Like, that's a good, good Cork forward line, and they beat them out the gate. The full back line struggled. Like, Alan Cadigan and Hogan were brilliant throughout the game. They got 3-14. From that full forward line. I think that's where they're really, really going to struggle against Limerick, because they're playing arguably the best full forward line in Ireland at the moment. Like, so how do they stop that if Callaghan and Horgan could do such trouble between the two of them?
Well, that's
going to be a big question mark for the weekend.
That is a big question mark, yeah. Because, like, I mean, Kilkenny looked to be falling into the Cork trap where their half-back line was marking their men, and that's a Cody thing. Mark your man, look after it, leaving loads of space. Cork played that beautiful ball in that were able to expose that. Limerick will absolutely do the same thing as that. So what do Kilkenny do here, Brian?
Yeah, so it's going to be a massive chess game then as well, because, you know, Kilkenny in against Wexford in the final, they followed them out the field. More or less, they left Park Walsh on his own. But apart from that, it was Hugh Lawler against Conor McDonald inside for long periods of that game. So, by and large, Wexford dictated the tactical battle and Kilkenny tried to follow suit. Whereas I thought against Cork, after the initial opening up by Cork, that Kilkenny went back to type and went back to what they do best, you know, the half back line sitting back in the pocket, marking space, midfielders, half forward line all dropping out, and you know, negating that space from the Cork perspective up in their forward line. So, you know, obviously that's what Limerick are well set up to try and get around, because their use of the short ball in that middle third area, in particular, is excellent, and they don't spray long, stupid ball essentially just up the field. They don't just hit it and hope. They'll keep working that short ball until they get a runner or a shooter, or till they get someone moving inside. So in fairness to Limerick, I think they're masters of everything at the moment. So I just think it'll lead to a massive tactical battle, and it comes back to me as well about the Limerick halfback line, because we know they won't really move. Kilkenny generally go route one with puckouts. No one's able to break down this Limerick halfback line yet. You know, they're just so strong in the air. But then Kilkenny love to go route one. So, you know, what's going to happen? Something has to give. So far, that Limerick halfback line hasn't given at all. But I think we probably don't have as good a half-hour line to win their own ball as we'll see with this Kilkenny half-hour line either.
Well, that's the thing. You've covered a few points there. The obviously, we can move on to the puckouts, because I was picking a half-forward line of Walter Walsh, TJ and Adrian Mullen. Like, there's nothing wrong with that half-forward line in the air.
Richie Hogan still, even though he's small, is excellent in the air.
So. Yeah. Did Richie play in the corner the last day, or did he play on the wing?
A bit of both, I think it was, really, being honest, yeah.
So even if it was Richie Hogan, that's the thing. So
it's good half-forward line.
And is the whole idea is to hammer the hammer. Is that what they say, Michael?
Exactly.
Yeah. I would, like, if they do play that four half-forward line with Richie Hogan there instead of Adrian Mullen, they're excellent in the air. Like, I've marked every one of them, and they're so hard to stop catching balls. And I would go that route, because Kilkenny don't hit sharp balls, they don't hit sharp puckouts. So if you're going to hit the nail on the head there, like, put your strongest half forward line on their back line and just win that battle one on one. And they have to win it. Like, if they don't win it, they'd lose the game. So like, if you don't do it, they won't get that ball into the full forward line. Like, and that's just the nature of it. So I do it. It would be some battle. Would it be great to watch?
Yeah.
And I don't know who'd come out on top. Like, Walter hasn't been 100% fit. Either Richie Hogan, but it's typical Kenny. They come into form when they need to. You know, in big games, the big players stand up. Like Richie Hogan the last day, or TJ Reid was marked out of it again. Smashing on the freeze, didn't miss any, but 11 Kilkenny lads stood up against Cork and scored from play, that apart from TJ, which is huge. And Kilkenny haven't been doing that. When TJ hasn't been on form, they've really struggled. So that's a huge plus to take from the Cork game. So if they can take that into this game now, they've a fighting chance. I don't think they'll win, but they've a fighting chance.
Right. TJ's going to enjoy.
Go on. Can I just make the point that obviously TJ was man marked again? Mark Ellis obviously tried to sit back into the pocket, but that's not what Limerick do. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. You know, because that's where I'm saying it's a game of chess. So TJ plays at centre forward. Declan Hannan definitely not going to pick him up. He likes to sit in the pocket. So it's interesting. So I think, look, one of Cody's strengths has been down to the years. He'll pick his forward line how he sees. He'll, you know, really get at that Limerick backline. So it's not just a case of, look, this is just the way we line up and that's the way we're going to do it all the time.
Yeah.
He'll pick horses for courses. So he'll try and see where the weakness is. And I think, look, they'll try and go back and beat Kilkenny again, because I don't think they work Kilkenny against Wexford and that Leinster final.
No, but I think obviously with all that, bearing all that in mind, that Hannon won't follow TJ, he'd be off his head not to play TJ at 11 then, and everything
yeah,
to go
exactly.
Oh, no, he will, 100%.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's no two ways about that. Whatever, and you're right, Limerick won't man mark TJ like Wexford and Cork did.
No, Limerick don't. John Coyle doesn't seem to put his team around other teams. Well, he puts Limerick out to beat the team no matter who he's playing, and they sort of play the same format. Declan Hannon is a smashing hurler, and he will sit back into the hole and defend it, cover his full back line. Look, the halfbacks, half forwards off Limerick pull back, so there isn't going to be that much space. They do pull back, and so does the midfield, and they will cover across TJ because they know TJ's going to be the main man. But I think he's definitely going to be a lot more influential than we've seen him for the last two games, because Kilkenny be mad not to try and find him all the time. Like, I would definitely, if I was taking the puck outs, I think Owen Murphy should be aiming for just over that midfield and dropping that ball just short of the half back line.
Yeah.
That's definitely the weakness, this, the chink in the armour for this Limerick
yeah,
team.
But that's the thing though, Brian, and even on those puckouts, we know what Limerick do, so they all drop half a line. So you look up, they look up, and the Limerick half forward line is maybe 5 yards on the other side of their men, and they're waiting for the ball to land to midfield or the other half back line to get breaks.
Or they goad you.
They go, yeah, but they're goading them maybe to go to the half back line, but Kilkenny won't do that. So here's the point I'm making is when you're going zonal, you're not being marked, right? So what's the Kilkenny half back line to do? Just stay available for a short puck out and let them get 5 or 6, 7 yards on them to the breaking area. Or do they go with them to the breaking area? They get the point I'm trying to make. Like, Limerick always seem to have...
It depends who Kilkenny actually play in the half back line, because maybe they will throw a curveball. Because if they... I don't know about Killian Buckley yet. Obviously, the team's not announced yet. But if they have Pádraic Walsh and Killian Buckley, they're two half-backs, they won't mind going to them. They'll have an awful lot more confidence.
I'd say...
I agree with what you're saying. Push after them. And I remember we had a really astute manager a couple of years ago, and we did it ourselves, and it was like very much, you know, go after them, attack them up the field, hurt them up the field. But, you know, I think that's what they were kind of doing against Wexford, and then they weren't winning the break all, and that's where they left massive holes at the back. So it's, look, game of chess, they keep saying. Just to go back to the centre forward situation, I do think they'll play TJ there this time, but last year they played Richie Hogan there, and it was Richie's... Look, he barely featured since that time last year, and he actually did damage on Declan Hannon in that game as well. He got a goal, I think 2 or 3 points, and he actually missed a couple of chances. So there's lots of hurling to be done from that centre forward position, but Declan Hannon obviously still has the ability to hit a whirl of ball, get up the field, get a point or two, so he still hurts you. So I think, you know, John Kiley knows that, the players know that at times that centre forward is going to do damage, but they look at the greater good of they're not creating goal scoring opportunities by Declan Hannon sitting in that pocket either.
Well, that's the thing. Brendan Bugler was on the show here recently. I don't know if it was the one you were on with him, Michael, or another one, but he dismissed the notion ever of your half back line following and leaving your full back line open. Like, he dismissed it. And then I was wondering, against Limerick though, is it the smartest thing to do? Because listen, if you drop off Limerick, we know, like the Brian says, they're going to do a few short passes until they get it to the spare man, and then they'll bypass you with a diagonal ball if you're a cover man, right? So you're not really benefiting your team. Is it more beneficial to push up on them all over the field, have your intensity levels as only Kilkenny can do at the level where there's no Limerick man getting enough time in the ball to give in a good ball, that it's longer, more hopeful balls, you know what I mean? And maybe giving the full back line a bit of help that way. Like, it is a difficult answer to answer, you know? Like, I thought it was just interesting that Bugs just dismissed the notion that you would leave your full back line. Dismissed it, you know?
See, like, as a half back line, Willie, the first thing to tell you is to protect your full back line. That's because it's goals. They'll get goals all day. Against Limerick, it's different. I'd have to agree with Bugs there. The only thing is, if you're doing the job and you're following him, your half forward up the pitch, there's no point in being 2 yards behind him. Like, you really have to commit to it and be under that breaking ball yourself, nearly forget where he is, because if the likes of Kyle Hayes or Gerard Hegarty get the ball, they'll just kill you all day long. And if they get it in front of you, then you're 40 or 50 yards in front of your full back line and they'll get murdered for the game. So it's a huge risk, but like the likes of Conor Fogarty, Killian Buckley, like Conor Fogarty was excellent the last day. If they push up, they can do damage to Limerick. And I just think if you're going up, you want to forget about your man and nearly just bypass him and be under that breaking ball, because you have to fully commit to it. And if they don't, if you do it half-arsed, you're not protecting your full back line, or you're not stopping the half forward line.
You're doing neither or. You're doing neither or. You have to fully commit to 100%.
And look, it's a huge risk, but I would do it because we've seen again and again the half forward line off Limerick set up so much for the attack, and you can't let them go.
Yeah,
you just can't, because they'll be under every breaking ball, and even if the half back line of Limerick win it, they'll just tap it up 15 yards up to your man. So it's a huge risk to leave him there. So I'd follow him. Yeah. I would. So it's a gamble, but
it is a gamble.
The Wexford half backs, in fairness, Paddy Foley, or even when it was Dermot O'Keefe back there, they fly up the field. Sean Murphy at times, they're gone as attackers. It's a nightmare if you're a wing forward having to turn around. I know it's a big part of football, obviously, but you turn around next to your wing backs and flying up the field, it absolutely kills you. But there's another way I actually would try and counteract that. I actually probably wouldn't hit the puck outs as far. So you're talking about puckouts that are all probably hitting the far 45, which allows the half back line to sit back, the midfielders drop back, the half forward line come to that middle field and go beyond where you can go as a half back. Mm. Whereas if you actually only hit them as far as the far 65, which traditionally they would have been probably going to max, it allows you as a half back to actually go there, to go with your man the full way, and you're not going to completely open up your full back line then either. So maybe hit the wings, get more bodies around that space. Like if you go back actually 2013 to Clare and Cork and the All-Ireland final, that's exactly what Clare used to do. They used to hit right out to the sideline, just on the 65, even the corner forward. Remember Podge Collins, I can vividly see Podge Collins coming in around from corner forward to come out and do that work as well. So it just allows you to get more bodies around the ball while not completely opening up your back line.
Yeah, no, maybe that's it. When you think about what Limerick want, Limerick, Tom Marcy drops, Grod Hegarty drops, and Kyle Hayes drops. Yeah. And do they want you to follow them or do they not? Because when they drop and they don't get followed, they get a lovely little short pass. Yeah. They'll give it to Keane Lynch. He'll give it back to them. Now suddenly the lads that have been holding the half forward line having to rush out to them to stop them.
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? Is it beneficial holding that half back line? To be honest, I can't make a decision on it. Thank God I'm not a hurling analyst, because I don't really know what the answer is.
Against Limerick, Willie, I wouldn't. I'd go with the half forward. They're too dangerous. I wouldn't with Kyle Hayes. I think you have to keep one fella defending your back line, and that would be, say, Park Walter, Killian Buckley, whoever centre back. Now they have to push up on Kyle Hayes for the majority of the game, but for the puck outs, if you've your two half backs going forward and your midfielders there's a good chance it won't break to Kyle Hayes, because there's going to be so many bodies in front of him there. I'd keep whoever centre back as that one man defending that line as best he can, just for the puck outs, and then you're pushing back up on Kyle Hayes after,
right?
Because you can't bring everyone up, because if it breaks down, you're snookered. So I would keep a centre back there, but the other two have to push up on them and be tight.
That's on
tight,
the 50-50 puck outs.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
In general play,
you have to pull up
man up,
because they'll pick him all day long. He does too much damage. But from the puck outs, I would keep your centre-back back.
Okay, I'll take that. Yeah. I'll take that as a compromise. Will we all agree on that, Brian?
Just about, yeah.
Only so we can move on, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
we get a consensus, because my brain has been tied in knots here talking about this. What do you do with Keane Lynch, Brian? Do you say Conor Fogarty, James Maher, just I want you to man mark him, everything goes through him, he's the one that sets up these lovely little short passes, he dictates the flow of the game, I don't want to see him on the ball without you being on him like a light?
Exactly.
In other words, sacrifice your game just to stop him.
100%. And sure, John Kiley said it for ages that's what they do with their midfield. They put, it's Will O'Donoghue this year, it was Darragh Donovan last year, they will put their midfielder, who they see as being the opposition's best ball player, to man mark him, and it leaves Keane Lynch to be that go between for both lines, essentially the quarterback, and trying to sort everything out. I think that's a no-brainer in hurling. I think that's traditionally been the way it has in hurling for a long, long time. Even in football, I think you can imagine that. You're always trying to negate one player more than the other, that can really hurt you. So look, whoever Kilkenny decide that to be, maybe they'll both help each other, and they'll have the same men lined up for each other anyway. So, will it be James Maher then? Will it be Richie Leahy? It's hard to know. or will, you know, to bring in a horses for courses, will they bring Buckley just to man mark in that situation to half or to midfield? So you just don't know, because as I said, I think Cody's very good that way in picking horses for courses.
Yeah, Cody was quoted saying everyone will want to impose their own game plan on the opposition, but that's not going to happen the whole time, and you've got to be able to deal with what they're throwing at you and at the same time try and play your own game. And it's funny when you hear Brian Cody, yeah, he just breaks everything down to most simplest form, and you wonder, is he kind of bluffing you, or is he actually being honest? I'm more of the line that I think he's being honest, that
absolutely,
he gives a lot of the responsibility to his players to play what they see in front of them. So if Tom Morrissey's getting on too much ball, well, then I'll follow him. You know what I mean? To play what's... And there's a huge benefit in that as well, is that obviously we hear criticism of players being married to systems, and Kilkenny players aren't.
No.
Do you know what I mean? They're not. They're going out to hurl, and enough players have enough brains to know, right, well, I was told to sit back, but my man's doing damage. I'm pushing up on him without really being told to... You know what I mean?
You do get a sense of that, Woolly. Like, games evolve so much, and... Again, it comes down to trust, and Brian Cody just seems to trust his players during the game. You game manage. Like, if your player is pushing up and he's not doing much and you're dropping back and picking up ball, great. And if he starts getting ball, push up. And yeah, Kenny players just seem to have the free rein, now, obviously to a limit, to do what they want in games if they see how they see fit. And like, as a player, it's something you'd love to
it's
do.
It's empowering, like, yeah.
It is empowering, and you can see the freedom and how they play, and they make decisions for themselves, and I think it's obvious for everyone to see. So I don't think that's a bluff call from Cody at all. It's something that every player would love to have. And again, going back to the Keane Lynch point, he's so hard to mark, Woolly, man mark. I think, like, of all the players, you see Tony Gleeson, Tony Kelly, Austin Gleeson, he's the most difficult to man mark, I think, because his timing is so good coming onto a breaking ball. And Limerick's work rate, where they get 10 fellas around the ball working hard, he just slips out of that so well. And he always seems to be at the end. And even if he's surrounded by players, he's so good in that tight situation of picking up a ball. He's definitely the most difficult, I think, of all the players to man mark. And it's why you see him so involved in games. Like, he might be out of a game for 10, 15 minutes, but he's never out of a game for 70 minutes, you know. He's always involved in big plays. I think that's the reason he's so good around tight spaces.
Yeah, no, and he can win his own ball as well, which is good. How do you see the matchups going, Brian, just to finish up? Paul Murphy on Peter Casey, Hugh Lawler on Galan. Do you think that's who'll be picking up? Obviously, Hannan will be on.
Yeah, TJ. It's hard to call, being honest, because they might put Paul Murphy on Graham Mulcahy either. You know, you'd be worried. That's the one fear I'd have, would be Kilkenny's full back line, how they will actually go on this Limerick full forward line as well. So it's a tough one. You know, will Pádraic Walsh actually play in the full back line either? You know, I know they put him back there for Cadigan as well. So I think it's the one area, if I was a Kilkenny person, that I'd have my most fear around, because, as I said numerous times before, Limerick are the masters of getting one player in particular into unbelievable positions and just keep pounding the ball to them, and you know, they're really hurting them. So, you know, of the three lads that are inside, there'll always be two inside, and they're creating great space. So I don't know. Paul Murphy seems to struggle when there's huge amount of space. You know, would he be better off following whoever it is going out the field on that particular day? So I don't know. It's a hard one to call. Just to go back on the man mark of Keane Lynch, just a point I want to make on that. I think one of the reasons Keane Lynch is so hard to man mark is the fact that he's not worried about scoring. You know, you mentioned Tony Kelly, you mentioned Ozzie Leeson. Their game is built around putting up 4, 5, 6 points, and they're not happy if they're not. And the crowd isn't happy if they're not as well. Whereas Keane Lynch's game is built around actually, you know, for the greater good of the team. He will pop up invariably with the odd point or two or even a goal, but generally it's about, you know, creating space, getting good balls to people around him. So that's why sometimes it can be so hard to man mark.
Yeah, it's almost like he's not dangerous enough on the scoreboard to be man marked.
He's interlinked play. Like, if he gives a smashing back pass behind his head or a pick up, the crowd cheers crazy for that. He's right. Brian's right there. He doesn't have to get a score to get the crowd behind him, but he's just so influential, like, with his passes, Woolly. It's understandable. He has to be man marked, but it's just very difficult to do it. He's so good in all areas.
Yeah.
I think the full back line you might see Paul Murphy, Pádraic Walsh, and Deegan. I think you might push Hugh Lawler out the pitch because that's your most experienced man and the best players that can he have in their back line. I wouldn't be surprised to see that back line.
Right, and maybe Hugh Lawler at centre back.
Exactly. He's young, he's fit, and he might just push out on him.
Deegan
might mark Aaron Gillan in that situation as well, because he's done it before as well, and he's strong in the air. So he'll suit him body shape wise as well, you know, to be well matched. So you could see something like that. So look, that's what I'm saying. Cody, I think, very hard to second guess what he'll do, because he will he will handpick them, so that it won't be just they'll go out and hurl their positions.
Yeah, no, exactly. Right, lads, we'll leave it there. We'll come back with Paddy Power predictions.
And the game takes on, can very, very often then take on a life of its own. What's tactics? I mean, you've got to make decisions and you've got to decide what you're going to do, and at the end of the day, you hand it over to the players and the players play, you know? The game was fast, was furious, it had everything really, you know, and you don't have too much influence on what's happening. What happened last year, it goes out the window, or the year before, or whenever it was. Tipperary, don't go away. The air is there. And the game takes on, can very, very often then take on a life of its own.
So we'll start quickly with Limerick and Kilkenny, lads. Limerick are 8-15 favourites. Kilkenny are 2-1, and the handicap here is -3. If you're that way inclined, Michael, I'll start with you quickly.
I got it wrong last week. I think I'm going to go Limerick only. I think they've just been so strong all year, and the places where Kilkenny were troubled against Cork and their full back line, I think arguably Limerick have a stronger full forward line, so it's going to cause more trouble, I think. So I'd have to go with Limerick.
Just a straight win, you're not interested in the -3?
No, I think there'll be 2 points in it.
Right, yeah. Okay, what about you, Brian?
Something similar. I'll go with Limerick as well. I think they are the team to beat in this championship. I was concerned earlier in the year about this, like, to and fro in terms of they're playing well in one game, not in the next game, but they've settled down now. They're playing what we all know is their best 15. I just think they'll have too much for Kilkenny. I think Kilkenny obviously were very impressive against Cork, but I just think they're tactically they're gone to a new level that Kilkenny are not able to cope with. So I think Limerick will do this. If anyone's capable of putting a score on Kilkenny, I think it's Limerick, but you know, we saw that in the league earlier this year, but I think Kilkenny will have learned a good bit from that. But I still think Limerick would probably do it by about 5 to 6 points, I think.
Right, okay, Limerick -3. I would be slightly favouring the Limerick -3 myself, but we could all end up with eggs on our faces. Yeah, with Kilkenny, we know what they're like.
Wexford, you see, this is it. Like, I can't believe I'm going against Kilkenny. Look, it's unbelievable, man. Like, look, let's put it this way, there'll be no one shocked if Kilkenny do win this.
No, well, that's just, fair. That's fair. It's more Limerick's brilliance than Kilkenny, you'd be edging towards them. Wexford, exactly. Tipperary, lads, the betting's exactly the same. Leinster County's not being given a chance in the bookies, and Leinster men here not giving them much of a chance either.
It's not going to get any better.
But I'm going for Wexford in this one.
I'm going for Wexford too.
Wexford are 8-15, Tipperary are 2-1. So I had a very good quote from Colin Bonner. I want to read it out to you, lads. I'm going to town on Colin Bonner. He talks about Wexford style of play. He says, Bonner Mar's style is what Wexford are. Every one of them. So Colin Bonner is trying to break this down for Tipperary fans that might not know the Wexford player as well. He says, it's 15 Colin Bonners. So, like, I thought that was a good one. How do you see this one, Michael?
God, I hate it, because I'd love to see Wexford win. I really would. I think I love the crowd and the colours, and if they're in the All-Ireland final, it'd be unreal. But I just think Sheedy's going to have Limerick Tip hopping off the ground. Will he? I do. I'd actually think they're going to beat Wexford well.
Right.
I just have this feeling they were awful against Leash, awful against Limerick in the Munster final. I don't think Wexford would have learned too much from the Leash game, to be honest with you. Now, I think Sheedy would have been fuming, because say the Leash goal, as I heard before, the ball can go by you, the man can go by you, but the two can't go by you together.
That was a good one.
They should have. Brendan Marsh should have cleaned out. I think it was Ross King got the goal. It just flicked by two players, and I think that's the big disappointment. But I think Sheedy would lay it into the Tip lads since that doesn't happen here against Wexford. And I just think if they click, which they haven't over the last few games, they'll really, really hurt Wexford. And I think you'll have them playing out the lines, because they know Wexford are a sweeper. I think they'll play smartly from the back line, and we're due big games from the likes of Bubbles and the McGraths and Callanan. So I just think I think Wexford are going to beat them, and beat them well.
Right, okay. So Michael Ryan was quoted, Brian, during the week, and he says, I think it'll be tactical. They'll still play with their tried and trusted system. We and Tip have come up against that system time and time again. There's nothing new there we haven't seen before, and our record of dealing with that is actually quite good. And it made me think, like, it probably is a bit good. Like, they've definitely been able to take care of Waterford playing that system.
Yeah, they have. But look, I've said this a couple times. I was in Wexford Park this year, and Wexford really troubled them. Now, I know Noel McGrath was sent off, but Wexford won by a point. But, you know, five or six times, and particularly in that first half, they opened Tipperary up completely. They were at sixes and sevens. You know, Park Mara was really last gasp defending, and just sometimes it was even Wexford just dropping the ball. It wasn't necessarily good defending either. I think Wexford are a much slicker outfit now. They have huge confidence. Don't underestimate that confidence in Wexford. These guys thrive on that. You know, you're talking about the likes of Conor McDonald, Lee Chin. These boys are real confidence hurlers. You know, Dermot O'Keefe. We've been saying this Wexford team is no mugs. Often we were you know, giving out about Wexford because we felt they were being impinged a little bit and held back a little bit, but I think they're going to really cause this Tip team to struggle. I think the Tip full back line and the Tip half forward line are really struggling at the moment. They don't have a settled midfielder alongside Noel McGrath. They have a lot of questions they need to answer themselves. So they're not the team that we saw towards the end of May and in June, and they're a little bit brittle with confidence even, because you could see that within some of their hurlers. You know, Noel McGrath, or sorry, not Noel McGrath, Bubbles, Dwyer, John McGrath. These boys were, you know, I know they're top class hurlers, but it's not easy when you're not playing well, and they didn't play well against Leash, and they didn't play well in the Munster final. I take Michael's point that Sheedy would have had a massive stick to beat these boys with over the last few weeks. He will have him raring for it, mad for action. I think we'll see a much, much better Tip performance. But I just think, don't underestimate this Wexford team. They are better than people are giving them credit for.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Just quickly, last one was this puck out to James Barry that Leash kind of exposed. Yeah. Like, I mean, Tip will be too smart for that, surely. They'll put James Barry out centre back for the puck out, maybe, and drop Paddy Maher in, you know, and let him. I'm sure they'll have worked that out. So, in a way, Leash have done them a favour, Michael, yeah, with that one.
Yeah, I don't think they'll go short term. Like, look, it's beyond James Barry's mind as well, you know. I nearly don't want the ball at this stage. I can imagine it's going to be like that. But they just won't go that short, will you? Like, and if they do go short, Wexford will probably leave him on his own, you know, to goad them a bit. But I'd say if he's the only back available, they just go long.
Right,
I just don't think they'll go short in, because it hasn't worked in the past. So.
But if say, for example, if Tipperary put Paddy Maher full back, Wexford wouldn't want to go in short to Paddy because he'd use it better.
Yeah.
And James Barry, if they mark Paddy at full back, yeah, James Barry would be free at centre back, which you probably don't want him free at. They wouldn't want to leave him free at centre back.
No, because
right?
They would give it to him then.
They would give it to him.
No, they definitely
then
would.
Yeah.
So you'd be sort of, if they do that, you'd have a player in between both. You know, but I couldn't see Paddy Maher going back full back just for puck out. So I don't think it'd be doing Sheedy style.
Right.
So I'd just say to go long if James Barry's the only available forward.
Okay, you're going by back. Tipperary -3, the handicap on according to Paddy Power is -3. You're going for that. And you're going for Wexford, just straight up win, Brian, the same as myself.
Yeah, I am, yeah.
Okay, and that's not just because I'm going to Wexford tomorrow night. Right, lads, that'll do. That's brilliant stuff. That's always time for. We'll be back with Damien from Paddy Power next. Damien from Paddy Power, how's it going?
Not too bad, Colin. How are you?
All good, all good. Come here, right, we'll start off with my accumulator. It's not really accumulator now, it's more of a double.
Yeah, it's a double. We're getting to the business end of the year, I suppose, so we've only got a couple of matches. You've gone for Limerick and Wexford both to win, and we're going to enhance that from 7-2 out to 9-2.
7-2 out to 9-2. Okay, that's not bad. Wexford is the outsider and Limerick are the favourites in that one. Anything else you want to tell us about before we get into the two games?
Yeah, we have a few more specials just on one side that I'll go through. One is the three big players playing this weekend. Seamus Callanan, Aaron Gillan and TJ Reid all score a goal at 10-1. Another one just with the games in Croke Park, maybe it could be high scoring. All teams to score 25 or more points is 8-1. And another one that I think will be a bit popular this weekend, looking back at last year's semi-finals, we've both games to be a draw at 100-1. Of course, last year's semi-finals, both matches were draws. So if you fancy something at a bigger price, 100-1 for both games to be a draw.
Yeah, okay, Euro there. Here, let's not go crazy, get a bit of an interest.
Worth a Euro, all right.
Definitely worth a Euro. Right, Wexford Tipperary. Both games are actually priced the exact same. You don't have much faith in the Leinster teams.
No, well, I suppose if it was Tipperary versus Kilkenny, they'd probably be a bit a bit closer together, but we're kind of pricing, I suppose, we think Limerick are a bit ahead of Tipperary, and despite the Leinster final result, we probably think Kilkenny are a bit ahead of Wexford based on the Cork game when they got a few forwards back and they looked a bit stronger.
Right, okay, that's fair enough. So anything in the Wexford Tipperary game you want to tell us about?
Yeah, I know you've Wexford in your double, and I'm a tip man myself, but I kind of agree with you. I think Wexford have a very good chance here. I think Tip haven't looked great in their last couple of matches. They have problems in like the full back line, midfield, and the half forward line, you could say, it looks like. So it depends, of course, whether Tip can rediscover their form from earlier in the year, early in the Munster Championship. And I think the key thing will be whether Tip can get goals against this Wexford team, because I think Tip will probably need goals to win it. Just a few bets I've picked out. One bet I like is Liam Ryan is 28-1 to be man of the match. He'll be full back for Wexford and he'll be marking Seamus Callanan. So I think if he has a big game and if he keeps Callanan quiet, which is easier said than done, of course, I think he could definitely be in the run for man of the match. And the other bet I like is under 2.5 goals at the match at 6-4. I just think all Wexford games this year have been low goal totals. Wexford don't tend to score many goals and they don't tend to concede many. So under 2.5 goals at 6-4 is another bet I like.
Yeah, that's definitely a good one, under 2.5 goals. So there was no goals in the Galway game in Salt Hill, I'm fairly sure.
Yeah, and one goal in both matches with Kilkenny. So yeah, it's come up lately.
Yeah.
So I think that has a good chance of coming up, yeah.
Okay, anything Limerick-Kilkenny then?
I suppose the thing here is whether Limerick can kind of, If Limerick play like they did in the Munster final, I suppose I don't think anyone can live with them. But it's a question of whether they can duplicate that. And some of the Munster champions in recent years have been a bit flat in semi-finals. So you'd maybe give Kilkenny a chance. I think like Kilkenny's performance against Cork was very good. And they look to have strong forwards now with Walter Walsh, Richie Hogan, TJ Reid, Mullen and Fenley. That's a strong forward line. It's a better team than they were able to put out in the Leinster Championship. One bet I like, because I think both forwards will get chances here, is 6-5 Limerick to win and both teams to score a goal.
Yeah,
I could just see it being quite open. I think Limerick probably will edge it. I fancy Limerick. I just think they're a little bit better in the backs than Kilkenny are. And if I was picking someone, I think Galan at 7-1 for man the match. He's been kind of quiet-ish cut through the championship for a player who was brilliant during the league and was our favourite for hurler of the year at the start of the year. But I think this could be the day he really puts it together in Croke Park, and I think 7-1 man the match is good price.
Yeah. Okay, I think that 6-5 on Limerick to win and both teams to score a goal is a very good one, right? Because,
yeah,
you know, there's not great value in Limerick at 8-15.
Yeah, it just bumps up the price a bit. And like looking at both sets of forwards, you think it's very hard to see either of them not scoring a goal. So it just bumps up your price to kind of a backable price on Limerick at 6-5.
Yeah, okay. Brilliant stuff, Damien. Thanks very much.
All right, thanks, Colm.
All right, that's always time for. We'll be back on Monday as usual, where we'll review the two All-Ireland semi-finals. So we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power, home of the GAA Hour Hurling ACCA.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so I opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken. Let it go.